one. Hi, everyone. Thank you for being here today. I'm opening the meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Legalization for this February 2nd, 2016. We have a lot of people here, and so I wanted to, as our committee members take their seats, I want to describe for you what the process is going to be today. We have 2 hours total. At the beginning of the meeting, we're going to adopt some committee rules for the session. We're going to have Mark Mayer, who is the drafter of these bills, very briefly describe some changes that have happened since the last meeting that we had. We're going to invite committee members to describe amendments that they would like to make us aware of. And then we're going to have very brief remarks, first by OLCC, then the Oregon Health Authority, and we're going to start calling up panels of witnesses to provide testimony. We're going to ask people to speak for no more than 3 minutes each. In the spirit of trying to get as many people through as possible, I'm going to start by inviting Amy Margolis, Megan Wallstatter, and Anthony Johnson to the table. So be aware that you're on deck. And then I'm going to go through groups of people who are signed up. After that is going to be Rob Bovet, Scott Winkles, if he's available, and Anthony Taylor, if he's available. And now that we have a...
Madam Chair, if you and members of the committee, if you wouldn't mind, so we have a lot of testimony here today. Members are being asked to keep it to 3 minutes apiece. What you're going to see at the 30-second mark is this sign. At the end of time sign, that's what you're going to see. This three-minute time limit does not apply to either questions from the members or Mark Mayer. I would also, given the number of people scheduled to testify, if we aren't able to get through everyone, please don't hesitate to send your testimony directly to me or to JML Exhibits at state.or.us.
There's too much of a connection there.
So we have a quorum from both of the committees, and I would entertain a motion to adopt joint committee rules, please.
So moved.
All right. Vice Chair Senator Przanski moves that we adopt joint committee rules. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, we have adopted joint committee rules. All right, now I'd like to open a public hearing on the two bills that are under consideration today for remarks. One is House Bill 4041, and the other is Senate Bill 1511.
Madam Chair, 4014, not
4041. Pardon me, 4014, thank you.
And Madam Chair, could you make an announcement for the audience that this is just public hearing? There will not be a work session today on either of these bills, so people understand this is not a one day only.
I think you just did.
Yes. So I will, in the interest of efficiency, please consider that the accurate summary of what's happening. It's a public hearing. We're going to begin now by inviting Mr. Mayer to briefly summarize changes in the bill since we last spoke together in January. Welcome.
Co-chairs Burdick and Leininger, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I am going to be discussing very briefly differences between the Dash 1 amendments to both of these bills and the base bills that were introduced. The House Bill 4014 has not changed a lot with respect to the provisions that were already written. Those provisions are primarily technical fixes that agencies and industry folks have been coming up with to the overall larger bills that you guys passed through committee last session. There have been a few things that were added. I'll go over those very briefly, and I'll mention the page numbers very briefly. On page 35, the first major difference is there is a technical fix to the regulatory specialists piece. This fix is primarily to convey that the training for both regulatory specialists with respect to alcohol law and with respect to marijuana law, it's going to be the same person, and they're going to be trained to do both. That's what this fix is primarily about. The very next section on page 32, I guess the regulatory special is on page 29, excuse me. Very next section on page 32, we've narrowed what is exempt from public disclosure for purposes of licensees. What is exempt from public disclosure? That which the OLCC is not required, that they can but is not required to disclose, is the addresses of different licensee locations, with the exception of the retail stores, of course. Security plans or operational plans that are relevant to any of the licensees, as well as any proprietary information. And that's what OLCC can retain and not disclose upon an exemption. We've also mentioned that this exemption from public disclosure does not apply to a law enforcement agency. They can continue to request. On page 38, actually on page 37, you'll see a heading that says taxation of cannabis and cannabis products. Quite a few technical amendments submitted by the Department of Revenue through this section. I can explain those in more detail to anybody who wants to come down to my office. I think the most substantive fix here is on page 38, the boldface on line 11, subsection 6A. This provision prevents bundling of marijuana and marijuana-derived products with other products in order to affect the taxation rate. In other words, what this prevents is selling what would normally be $30 marijuana with a $15 pipe, swapping the prices, selling the pipe for $30 and the marijuana for $15 to avoid the tax hit. So essentially bundling. Then finally, on page 62, it begins on page 61. We're in the crime section now, and we did a lot of work with possession between the base bill and the Dash 1 amendments. And essentially what we did is, the first thing we did is there was a slight increase with regard to possession of extract. That has been removed from the bill. There's now it is static with what was in the law previously. But the primary thing that we did is we created a new section on page 63, section 47, which is modeled after the language that applies to adults. And essentially, last session, this committee passed a statute as part of House Bill 3400, which was the minor in possession. And if you're a minor in possession, you can be charged with a violation under that section and have your vehicle driving privileges suspended. But we didn't touch the base crimes with regard to possession for minors at all. What this language basically does is it says, if you're a minor and you possess that which an adult cannot lawfully possess, then you're guilty of an A misdemeanor. However, if you're a minor and you're possessing that which an adult can lawfully possess, then the only penalty will be through the minor in possession statute, and you'll be funneled into that other statute. I believe the idea here was consistency and application of the law, easy for law enforcement because it'll be the same standard for both. It'll be easy to figure out which law applies to the kids if they're caught. So we've done that. And then there's been some other I would go through the crimes very carefully. There's been a few other changes made. For instance, possession standard possession is an A misdemeanor if a person who is under 24 years of age delivers for no consideration to a person who is at least 16 years of age. And this is to alleviate situations on college campuses and that sort of thing where maybe it's being shared. So there's been some other tweaks to the crime sections, mostly for purposes of reduction. And one of the increases from the last bill was eliminated. So those are the primary changes to 4014. There are some other language tweaks and some other technical cleanup stuff, but mainly those are the substantive things. In Senate Bill 1511, really there's two major changes, and this is the large, I would call it a policy package bill. And I'll just explain these without reference necessarily to the page numbers. The very first part of Senate Bill 1511, excuse me, in the Dash 1 amendments, excuse me, is called registration for medical purposes. And the previous version of this had, if you registered under as an OLCC license to sell medical and distribute medical product, you could cross sell into basically the medical system, and you could buy from the medical system. We've simplified it in this particular draft so that it only allows the distribution of medical products through the OLCC licensing system as if it was a non-medical product, with the exception of one thing. If you're a producer and you choose to enter into a relationship, a contractual relationship with a patient cardholder, you can do that, and you can use excess marijuana from that marijuana that's grown for that patient. You can use that excess marijuana and sell it into the medical system to a dispensary. It has to be through the agreement. It has to be agreed to by the patient cardholder, just like in the OMMA statutes. And then those extra plants are not part of your plant canopy that's otherwise imposed on OLCC licensees. So that's the major difference between the previous version and this version. And then toward the end of the Dash 1 amendments, another major difference, after the early start provision, on page 27, the Dash 1 limits, stay on possession limits for mature marijuana plants. This basically sets up a process by which if you begin to apply for OLCC licensure, you will be able to have a stay on the cap that's currently on medical grows underneath House Bill 3400. There's two scenarios. One is if you're not in a county that has imposed a moratorium, you have to have fully applied and have paid all your fees. If you are in a county that has imposed a moratorium, since you won't be able to get a land use compatibility statement, you have to have fully applied with the exception of getting the land use compatibility statement and pay all your fees. And so those are the main differences between the base bill and Senate Bill 1511-1s. Are there any questions?
If there are questions, this would be a great time. Also, I wanted to invite members to describe any amendments that you are planning to bring so that we can make the community aware of amendments that are forthcoming. If you have them, great, but if you just want to describe them in words, that's fine too.
Madam Chair, this amendment just went up on OLIS. There was concern by some of the medical growers that the March 1st deadline for complying with the plant limits did not give the Oregon Health Authority time to determine whether they qualified for a grandfather clause. So what I've done in the dash in the 1511-10 amendments, which just went up on OLIS, and my name is on it under our brand new policy to put your names on amendments, give those folks a two-month period to comply with the plant limits up to 96. If you've got over 96 plants, then this doesn't help you. But if you've got between 48 and 96 plants and you want to show that you had those plants as of December 31st, 2014, and the OHA agrees that you're grandfathered in, then you have until May 1st to get to that point. So you don't have to dig up plants in the meantime. And or if the OHA makes the determination that you're grandfathered in before then you'll comply with whatever that determination is before May 1st, but no later than May 1st. So this gives people a little breathing room who are trying to get into that grandfather window. So that's what the Dash 10 amendment to Senate Bill 1511 does.
All right. I think, Senator Farioli, maybe you have an amendment
I
to
do.
Describe?
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Dash 2 reflects a change in tribal governments' approach, and this would allow tribal governments to comport their program with the program that exists in Oregon for recreation, production, and sale. It would require them to have the same sort of standards for public health and safety, regulation and tracking, sale, production, processing, transportation, and delivery. So, Madam Chair, I think that's up on OLS. If
Great.
It's not, it will be quickly. It is the 4014-2 amendment.
Excellent. Other Senator Przanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have a number of amendments that I've been asked to draft. I'll just briefly go over what those subject matter is, because there still could be work needing to be done. One is regarding the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act. This is one of the areas that we've been hearing from individuals wanting to potentially have exemptions for such as cannabis cafes. And so that's one that we'll be working on. That is currently the -4 amendment, which is not up on OLS yet because we haven't complied with or haven't asked all the stakeholders to weigh in on those yet. The -7 deals with distance requirements as to dispensaries, as well as recreational. If I remember correctly, this is the one to actually address an issue that came up after we finished our work this last session. Some local locales have actually misinterpreted what we had said was our intent, that we were going to say that a recreational facility could be within 1,000 feet of a medical facility. And we had set up what I thought was a distance of 1,000 feet from each medical to medical versus rec to rec. And somehow at least one community has taken it and said that they could actually have that same distance requirement between the two. When we talked early in the session, when we were putting the bills together, we wanted to ensure that you could actually have an operator have both side by side if they wanted to. So that's one to give clarification to ensure that the local authorities are following the policies of the state. There's another distance requirement, one to give some flexibility to the Oregon Health Authority and siting of dispensaries. Currently, they have to be with outside of 1,000 feet of a school. There are some situations that have been brought to my attention where you could actually have a geographic or physical barrier between that 1,000 feet that would allow for potentially siting of these facilities closer than 1,000 feet. So in other words, with the way this is now currently written, that no matter what, they'd have to be at least 500 feet from each other. But if there's something like a freeway, a waterway, some type of physical barrier that would keep students from being able to just have direct access to that facility, that would give some flexibility for some communities. Lastly, I know that in the area that we're working on on crime and parole and probation, there was a issue that came up that was not covered in some of the primary bills regarding work release. This is a program that alternative sanctions where a person can be placed out on work release, and we want to ensure that they would be treated the same as if they were on probation or on parole or post-prison supervision.
Thank you.
And Madam Co-Chair, did you want us to also ask Mr. Mayor for clarification on what he's presented, or did you want to wait?
I think now that people are talking about their amendments, why don't we have people talk about their amendments, and then, yes, please do. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Madam Co-Chair, Representative Olson has a -2 amendment to Senate Bill 1511, which clarifies that marijuana is not defined to mean a product containing non-psychoactive cannabinoids intended to be applied to a person's skin or hair if the concentration of the cannabinoids in the product is 5% or less than 5% of the weight of the product. So, yes.
So lotions.
Right, for lotions.
Got it.
In addition, Madam Co-Chair, I'm working on hopefully a short amendment that at the request of Mowgli Holmes to have OHA do a request for a proposal for a research project
right.
on medical marijuana. And I'm also working, I try to work as quickly as possible, on standards around concentrates. I've been in discussions with various folks on that.
Great. Rep. Wilson and then Rep. Helm.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm not going to be specific right now about what I plan to do, but most of what I plan to do amendment-wise centers on Senate Bill 1511 with the intention of protecting the medical program, especially for my small growers in Southern Oregon. We've made some pledges early on that we would do as little harm as possible in this process to the medical side, and so I feel compelled to stay with that. And so there will be some forthcoming amendments on 1511.
Okay. Thank you. Rep. Helm.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have two proposed amendments, very small, dash 5 and dash 6. The dash 5 would amend section 16 of the original SB 511 and would change the single serving dose limit for the early start edibles from what it is now to the Colorado model, which is to have prepackaged products where the dosage is 10 milligrams and you can have no more than 10 of those per package. So we saw in our previous, in the long session, we saw several presentations that showed us examples of products that are very common in the industry right now. Those chocolate bars that we saw are ubiquitous. They are what the, a large portion of the purchasing public want. This would align that to what the norm in the industry is. The second amendment, the dash 6, is in the same section, and it just clarifies what I think was an oversight in identifying the type of vaporizer that would apply to certain types of concentrate products. There's a lot of different types of ways of extracting this oil. That type of carbon dioxide vaporizer is only one of them. I just wanted to level the playing field so that whatever conveyance device is chosen is equally covered.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have two that, do either of you want to speak about it? Okay. I have two I want to quickly flag. I don't know if they've been drafted yet. One has to do with the parole and probation treating medical cannabis like other prescription drugs. It would extend the protections for, you know, consideration of it as a prescription drug that, that in the current draft applies to parole, probation, and post-release supervision, also to pre-release, pretrial supervision, pretrial release, pardon me, and diversion programs. And so that ties in potentially to work release, as Senator Pazanski is talking about. So that arena of work. And then second, it's come to our attention that while we extended the ability to do business tax deductions for adult use businesses in House Bill 3400, it might have been, we did not expressly extend that to OHA regulated businesses. So if you're a business owner who is trying to take the state business tax deductions for operation of your business, we would provide parallel treatment for business owners of adult use and OHA regulated stores. And I want to thank Lindsay Reinhart, Lee Berger, for information about the treating medical businesses point. I don't know if you're on the amendment, and I want to thank Casey Houlihan for the other one. So thanks. At this point, we'll have questions with Mark. Please.
Representative Wilson's comments jogged my memory. I'm not sure what this amendment is. I know I've requested it. I may have it, but we may not need it because of things that are happening within OHA. But based on some of the concerns about regulatory requirements in the area of security and surveillance and so on, if we need it, I will be moving forward an amendment to provide relief from those requirements for the small growers and just apply them to the larger growers. So thank you, Representative Wilson, for jogging my memory.
Thank you. And before we start these questions, I want to articulate, and I hope people in the audience who are here, who've traveled here to listen and offer your views, I hope you're hearing us try to respond to concerns that we are hearing in the community. And this is going to be a kind of an ongoing process that probably goes on for several years, but I hope that what you're hearing is we're making a good faith effort to try to meet people's needs, and we'll get as far as we can get this session, which only has 4.5 more weeks, and the next session I'm sure many of us will continue trying to work to get further. Senator Pazanski, you had a question for Mr.
I did. Thank you. And with that understanding, I also agree with Representative Wilson. We all, when we started this last session, we all said we were going to hold harmless the family farms and ensuring that patients had direct access to their growers, and we weren't going to go forward and seeing that being bifurcated or destroyed. I will tell you that, as I've said in other comments, I'm very concerned where the Oregon Health Authority has gone with their rulemaking. I've been just informed this just prior to this hearing that maybe they're going back in to reconsider some of their rules. So hopefully they're hearing us and hearing us well. With that, Mark, I'd like to just direct your attention to 1511-1, the first page of Section 2, where we're talking about American marijuana producers, lines 18 through 20. There it states, this is to produce marijuana for medical purposes, and marijuana producer that holds a license under ORS 475B.070 must register with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission under this section. I'm concerned, I understand, I think that is really directed for those who want to go into the rec business, that they have to register with the commission. My biggest concern, though, knowing how some stuff has been interpreted by the health authority, they may require someone who wants to stay in the medical side and exclusively in the medical side that they then have to go ahead and register with OLCC. So I want something on the record to ensure that what we're dealing with here are those who are existing who want to go into the retail or commercial side as compared to those who plan to stay just in the medical side.
Yeah, the way this is drafted is it leaves the medical system completely alone. Those statutes are untouched. They are not amended in this particular section of this bill, and they will be governed the same way as they are currently drafted, or as they are currently enacted into law, excuse me. All this basically says is if you want to engage in selling medical products and you're an OLCC licensee, you have to register with them. And the baseline requirements are very small. Basically, they can charge a fee if they want to, and they can impose qualifications if they see need fit. But the language merely requires only two things, and that's you send them notice that you want to participate in this so that they can register you as being somebody who's going to deal in these types of products. And then they know that you're going to be dealing in them, and they can track that information. But it doesn't touch the medical system at all. It's only within this system. And again, as I said earlier, the only crossover now is if a OLCC licensee who registers with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to do this, if he wants to or she wants to enter into patient relationships, they can through a contract. Instead of through cards, it's through a contract. But that's the only crossover now between the two systems in this concept now.
Thank you. Do you have a follow-up to that, or shall we move forward?
Let's move forward. We can do some of this offline. I would just want to put some things on the record, knowing we're going to come back.
Great. So at this point, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't see any other questions that we need to pose right now. We're doing a lot of homework, one-on-one work, as we try to clarify and develop amendments for bills. But we have a lot of people who want to share their views. I'd like to ask a representative from OLCC and one from Oregon Health Authority to come forward, Mr. Patridge. And I think possibly – and great, we have both of our great leaders from OLCC. And then we're going to have, I believe, Beth Ann Darby and Andre Orso from – OHA come speak, and I think OHA's got some information they want to make sure the regulated community and the patient community hears about how they are thinking about moving forward. So welcome, and I have to say that we are excited to hear from you, and if you could speak succinctly, that would also be a bonus.
Absolutely. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rob Patridge. I'm the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Steve Marks, Executive Director.
We want to just say thanks for the opportunity to be here today. We appreciate what happened during the interim, and we had an opportunity to comment on the bill drafts during the interim. Many of those changes got incorporated in these drafts, and we have been very excited to work with the co-chairs related to this and members of the committee related to what's going on. We think it's been a great group of teamwork that's come forth in both Senate Bill 1511 as well as House Bill 4014. We've been out in the community as well, working with the stakeholders related to many of the pieces in both pieces of legislation. We feel like you have struck a great chord related to the compromises that we heard as we went around the state very early on, and we've all been working collaboratively together on this. So we think it's come a long way. We think generally this is both these bills are a really good end product from where we're from our perspective. There's a few small tweaks that we have, we're continuing to work with your legislative council related to how those things work in terms of as they pass through from a legislative concept to the final bill to what we have to do on the ground. So there's some tweaks, and we've shared some of those things. And we're excited to for both these pieces of legislation. We really feel like this is going to help the industry as a whole move forward together and build and regulate this new industry that we have. Just to report in to you, we have 782 total current applications in the OLCC system that's coming forward. In addition to that, of those 782, there are 446 that are paid applications. So we are just to give you a flavor for what those are, and I think we're sending out kind of a breakdown again by county and where those are at, so we have all that information. But we're very excited to work with you. We also wanted to make the legislative committee aware that next week we're going to, on the 9th, which is the day you meet, we're trying to set up the cannabis tracking system demonstrations. We're working through details to make that available to legislators and legislative staff. We don't want to be overwhelmed by everybody. We're going around the state. We had something we have something tomorrow, Steve?
Yeah, tomorrow at the Cannabis Collective Conference. Okay.
So we've got several things going.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Marks, did you want to add something, or are you also?
We look forward to supporting the committee and the technical support that we can provide to make this workable for you. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, Senator
Polanski. Just a clarification on those number of applications. That's all licenses, I'm assuming, not just for one particular license.
It's all license types. I will add
you want the breakdown?
We have no lab application at this time.
Okay. We have a breakdown on each license type. So.
Great.
But thank you all for your hard work again.
And if we could now have folks from OHA come in, that'd be great. And then next up, we're going to have a panel that is Amy Margolis, Anthony Johnson, and Megan Wallstetter, please. Hi, welcome. Thank you for being here. While you're getting settled, I wanted to note that we're eager to have you testify. Since we have so many people who've come to share their views with us, we're going to ask you to testify briefly. I don't know if each one of you is speaking or just maybe one or two. But I think folks are really interested in the memo that you sent to us a couple days ago expressing some changes in course. And I think that may take some anxiety out of people who've been feeling anxiety. So I would particularly encourage you to talk about that. But anything else you can fit into roughly 2 or 3 minutes would be just fine.
Okay, thank you. Well, Co-Chair Bardick and Co-Chair Leininger, if I may,
and,
members
and
of the committee.
Please, you have more time than that. Also,
okay,
whatever
thanks.
You need.
You know, first I'm going to actually speak to the survey that was, oh, I'm sorry, Andre Uso, manager of Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. I'd like to speak to the request that was made the last time I appeared before this committee from Senator Burdick and Senator Farioli regarding a survey for dispensaries. We are conducting that survey currently. It ends Friday, February 5th, but at this point in time, we've had 146 dispensaries respond. That's about 36% of our total registered dispensaries. 92% of them responded that they're participating in early retail sales. When we asked them if they would switch over from medical to retail sales if co-location was not an option, 80% said that they were going to definitely do that or more than likely going to switch over. Ask if co-location was going to be an option and if they would participate in both medical and retail. About 98%, so they would definitely or most likely participate. And of course, we can have the final report and survey sent out to you when that's completed after Friday. So what we've done, and thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to send out a memo and some clarification on our proposed changes to the rules, our permanent rules on growers, dispensaries, and processors. What we've done is what we sent out to you is just trying to clarify from our point of view on where we have the authority to create rules with guidance from HB 3400 and clarifying the changes that HB 3400 made to Measure 91. And then in addition to that, letting you know where we have general rulemaking authority to provide guidance or public health and safety rules, but then changes that we've made subsequent to hearing public comment. So if you have any questions on that memo, the grid, or any of our proposed rules, I'd be happy to answer those.
Do you want to maybe speak to the highlights?
Yeah, could you describe some of the changes you're making in response to public comment? I think that would be really helpful.
Sure.
And I want to say how much we appreciate what I think is a really good faith effort, and you're working really hard. And I think we're all doing the best we can to get to a product that we think meets our statutory obligations and the needs of the community. It's a work in progress.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much. So one of our major concerns from particularly small growers and outdoor growers was the security requirements that we had in place. And that rule was based upon our general rulemaking authority to protect public health and safety. What we've done is we've taken out those fence and camera requirements from the rule, and we've just restated the language in Measure 91 now, saying that people will be broadly responsible for preventing public access to grow sites and keeping plants out of public view in consistency with Measure 91. In addition, we had mentioned rules on waste management and operating procedures. We now took those out of the proposed rules. And then as far as reporting requirements for growers, processors, and dispensaries, I know there was some confusion. We want to assure you that we're not having a tracking system anywhere close to OLCC's tracking system, and that it would be the aggregate transfer data for a particular dispensary, processor, or grower to a particular entity or person for that month. And that's all the reporting requirements would be under rule. Yeah, and I think that, and thank you, Bethann, that's very consistent with what our intention has been from the start and what we've been trying to craft under the rules. As far as concerns about effective date and implementation of the rule, the way that we look at HB 3400 is that it set the date operative March 1st, 2016, and that's the deadline that we've been operating under and diligently working towards. So, you know, to address those concerns, we try to clear up that, you know, it's beyond our rulemaking authority to change those dates, in addition to the plant limit concerns that people have had and not being able to prepare for plant limits by March 1st, 2016.
You may not have heard this, but Senator Burdick mentioned an amendment that she has asked to have developed that would have a stay on plant limits for people who are trying to get authorization to be under the grandfathered larger amount, and so hopefully that will also get at some people's concern about an abrupt change happening before you folks have time to process those applications.
Thank you, and I would appreciate that, and I think the agency could use the time to better prepare and work with the legislature on that also.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it is a priority to get it done within that time period.
Okay.
Put that on the record. Thank you.
Senator Pilanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I also want to echo having not a timeout but kind of a little respite to allow for these rules to actually be developed to the point of where they're going to work and we're not going to have the unintended consequences. I would say to the health authority, I ask that when you go through and modifying these rules and getting there, remember this program, meaning the medical program, has been in effect for 15 years. We didn't have a lot of problems that seemed like these rules were trying to address. I think a lot of this stuff that we had communities getting amped up over really should be more on the commercial side as compared to, as 91 said, do no harm. And so that's my hope, is that we do no harm and we can make the transitions as we need to in the future years, but let's don't overreact before we even get the rules in place to keep people having access, again, to the patients and the growers, because I'm still haunted by the statement, let's decouple those two, because that's not what this intent should be. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It looks like we don't have any more questions, but you've done a lot of great work, and in the last month, your team has been really doing a lot to respond to needs in the community and our needs, and I want to thank you for that. Okay.
Thank you, Co-Chairs. Thank you, Committee.
Transition to our first panel of witnesses, Amy Margolis, Megan Walsatter, Anthony Johnson. And our next panel is Rob Ovett, Scott Winkles, if he's available, and Anthony Taylor. And then we're going to start moving through the wonderful list of additional witnesses. Welcome, and if you could speak 3 minutes or less, that would be spectacular.
Okay. Chair Leininger and Burdick and company members, my name is Megan Wallstetter, and my husband Matt and I own Pure Green Medical Dispensary. We just celebrated our store's 2-year anniversary last Friday. I'm here to testify in support of SB 1511. I'm submitting this testimony in writing, but I just want to touch upon my main points here. SB 1511 addresses a number of important provisions. I would like to focus on expanded access via the siting of medical and retail cannabis on a single location for all types of licenses. The Oregon retail cannabis market is incredibly competitive. In order to compete and survive, we need to be able to continue to serve both medical and retail markets in one location. From a strictly business perspective, in order to support myself and my family, I would be compelled to choose the bigger and more profitable market, even though I'm a longtime believer in and participant in the medical market. Forcing stores to choose between medical and retail licenses could severely limit patient access and significantly hamper the industry. Close to 80% of the 404 dispensaries licensed now in Oregon intend to switch to the retail market. Currently, 44% of OMMP cardholders are eligible for some type of financial assistance. Patients will have longer distance to travel and significantly fewer options. Some of those patients might be driven into the illegal market because they have no access to a medical dispensary. Allowing expanded access will reduce the challenges inherent to the transition from medical to retail as it exists now. A store that chooses to participate in the OLCC program would, under the current rules, have to clear out its existing inventory and then reopen as an adult use retail store. Stores will have low inventory while liquidating for the transition, and then store owners will have to close down for an unknown amount of time to restock with OLCC approved inventory. This will be a financial hardship for businesses because they will lose revenue while closed and they will have to repurchase inventory. In addition, with every store buying inventory at the same time, we will likely see price gouging and supply shortages before adult use shops are able to open. It would be unfortunate if Oregon's cannabis regulations created a perverse incentive for people to seek product on the illegal market or to cross the border to Washington State. And it would be detrimental if a number of small businesses went under because they simply were unable to financially afford the transition. Finally, access improves under the concept of siting retail and medical together by vesting a single state agency with licensing and oversight across the supply chain, rather than burdening small businesses and taxpayers with duplicative and potentially conflicting regulatory structures. In closing, I strongly support SB 1511 and urge the committee to move this bill forward. Let's work together to adjust the regulatory model to fit the reality of what serves patients, our recreational customers, and our communities. Thank you.
Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Amy Margolis, and I will keep this extremely short. When I used to testify in front of the judiciary, we would say, good bill, should pass, and then we would step down. And I was tempted to do that this time, but I do want to comment on a few of the amendments and a few things that we support in the bill. I want to start with the criminal justice piece. We do not support any increase for criminal conduct anywhere in this bill package. The supporters of Ballot Measure 91 and our association, and I think everybody sitting in this room waiting to testify, was looking very much to see criminal penalties reduced as part of the passage of Ballot Measure 91, and we are asking you to continue that. We do support, however, the decreases in penalties for some of the crimes that are included in this bill package. We are pleased to see OHA adjust the rules. When I last testified, I hadn't even seen the changes that were made that we did not address during the Rules Advisory Committee. I'm happy that they took out all the parts that were not statutorily required. That leaves the rest of this in the legislature's lap if you wish to make any changes. If not, they've significantly narrowed the burden down for growers in particular. The security requirements are gone. The water rights requirements are gone. Anything that was not specifically delegated to them through the legislature is gone, and I appreciate OHA working so closely with the legislature on that and being so responsive to the people who have reached out and written letters and emails. As far as the new amendments We support the dash 10s. We support the dash 5s. I just had a chance to look at these. We are asking that you consider modifying the dash 6s to include both extracts and concentrates. I just had a chance to very briefly look at it, and it changes the type of delivery tool, but does not address expanding this to extracts and concentrates. We're asking that you consider doing that. We're also strongly in support of the microcanopy concept. I understand OLCC is going to be working very hard on helping small farmers enter and stay in the market, and I can report that many of the licenses that we have done are 1,000 and 2,000 square feet of flowering canopy. Finally, we view this as a business viability bill package. We talk a lot about small family farmers, and I want this committee to hear that almost everyone entering into this market is a small family farmer, whether they're growing indoors or outdoors. And the dispensaries are small family businesses, and so are the processors. And by allowing this expanded access piece to move, you are helping keep alive businesses across the state. And we ask you to move both of these bills. Good bills should pass. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, Anthony Johnson, here's Chief Petitioner, Measure 91, Director of New Approach Oregon. I'd like to thank you all for your work to addressing many of the issues that have faced the cannabis community, the industry, and our patients. I think we're moving closer and closer to fulfilling the wish of the voters who passed Measure 91 with more than 56% of the vote, and that is to treat marijuana offenses like we do beer and wine, to create an industry that we can be proud of, that promotes small businesses and mom and pops across the state. And I agree with much of what you've heard thus far on this panel. As we move forward, it'd be great to see further reduction in penalties, no increase in any penalties or new violations that'll disproportionately hurt people of color, definitely people who are suffering through poverty, as significant fines can have detrimental impacts upon people. It's encouraging to hear amendments about allowing people on probation to use medical cannabis, as well as having medical cannabis business deductions, as well as amending the Indoor Clean Air Use Act to allow for adults to utilize cannabis in public settings safe settings out of public view. I honestly believe this committee, the state, OLCC, is moving forward in a really good direction as far as the industry goes, and I know that we will have a regulated system we can be proud of. The one aspect that I think the state is missing, and I would like to see some improvements, and it's great to hear Representative Wilson touch on it as well, Senator Prozansky, and that is ensuring that patients do not lose access to medicine. And there have been several steps forward to help patients, help growers that have been proposed, certain pushbacks on the March 1st deadline for plant deductions or plant limits to be reduced, but they simply do not go far enough for too many patients. With new reporting, potential inspections, I sincerely believe that the state is doing what it needs to satisfy the Cole memo and to prevent federal interference with our marijuana laws. As an advocate, Chief Petitioner Measure 91, someone who looks to move marijuana legalization across this country, I have concerns about federal interference as much as anyone. But I think when you look at the state's the impact of the state and versus the impact of the patients, that these plant reductions on March 1st go too far, and I would encourage the plant limits to go up to 96 plants instead of 48, and let's at least push the date back to next year to give more patients, growers, and our communities time to address this situation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, all three of you. We appreciate it. Next up, I would like to invite Rob Bovet and Scott Winkles, if he is available, and Anthony Taylor. And I want to note regarding the criminal justice reform issues, the bill is drafted in a way that's hard to sort of see all the places where the penalties have been reduced, but there are a large number of penalties that have been reduced, and in the couple of instances where they have not, they are returned only to the level they were at before House Bill 3400. So there's not a situation in which a thing is criminalized that was not criminalized before, and we're continuing to negotiate within our body of legislators to try to bring things down as much as we can, and in some instances, as with a unlicensed manufacturing of extracts that can be flammable and create real risks of fire, in order to continue moving some other things down, we may need to restore that to the level it was at before House Bill 3400, and I hope that you will help us, you know, see the bigger picture and support what we're trying to do, because it's not easy and there's pushback from all sides, so thank you. Mr. Bovet, would you like to begin, or Mr. Taylor?
I'll defer to you.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chairs, member of the committee, I really appreciate the opportunity to come testify regarding these two bills. I would concur with Amy Margolis a little bit in good bill should pass. I do have some concerns. In my public testimony, I asked the committee to consider a couple of other amendments. One is to extend the discounted card fee to all veterans, not just those with 100% disability or PTSD. We're required, you know, the veterans are, you know, really being part of a state program really helps them in the VA healthcare system, and I hope that the committee would consider it. There's another concern I have, and that is with processors not being able to return product to a patient or a caregiver. I understand this is tricky, but I think it's an important piece that needs to be added to this legislation, because if a grower takes his product to a processor, you can't get any of it back. It's got to go to another processor or dispensary. So I think we need to create some kind of mechanism there to allow them to receive back, of course, not exceeding any of the limits that are applied to possession, but to be able to receive some product back. Because I'm not going to go out and buy a $4,500 closed-loop system to process a couple of ounces of cannabis for my personal use or to add to my topicals or to my edibles. So I hope the committee takes that into consideration. You know, it's a process. We're all trying to work through it. I know it's the lightning round of a session, and I just going to keep asking the patients that I represent to, you know, support the efforts here. I really support what OLCC is trying to do to bring more patients into a system that helps not only protect them, but provide ongoing the ability to meet the ongoing needs and provide continuity of care for these patients. We've got 76,000 patients in this state. They really need to get a break. And this continuity of care and meeting the ongoing needs is really uppermost in my mind in representing the patients. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. I'll be very brief. Kind of as Amy alluded to, I'll be speaking to the Dash 1 amendments to both bills, which is basically the base bills for both. Good bills should pass, is my short story. In terms of further explanation, as you're aware, I've had a hand in crafting good chunks of both of these, so especially understand that with the offense recrafts, there's a lot of complications. And there's a lot of details. My goal was not only to effectuate a lot of crime reductions in working with Senator Farioli and Representative Olson, but to simplify the administration and enforcement of those offenses. So the last change that Mark and I made was to the under 21 crowd, to just really simplify it. It did work quite a crime reduction as well, but I think it makes it simpler on the ground. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have regarding those. My only hesitancy in full-fledged support of both of these bills and the Dash 1s is we still need to do some more work on Section 22 of 1511-1. We can either try to do that this session, which is the reciprocity provisions to make those workable. We can either do that this session or kick it down to 17. Either way, I'm committed to working to try to make that functional. Don't have any comments on all of the Dash amendments because I've yet to process them all in my brain. I've heard new ones. Some of the ideas sound good to me. Others I'm not quite so sure, but I'll definitely give you my opinion when the time comes. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, may I just make one more comment? I really appreciate Senator Burdick's amendment to push the date for compliance of these grandfathering gardens in. I really am appreciative of that. I think it's going to give us the leeway we need to make sure that everybody comes into compliance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I'd like to now call Emily McLean, Mowgli Homes, and Cedar Gray, please. And then I would like to have Wendy Reardon and Shirley Mitchell and Jonathan Manton on deck, please. And as the panel gets here, I want to note that there are definitely going to be some issues we can't handle in this session. And I hope that we can all recognize that even working in good faith, we may have some issues that we have to handle in 2017 and 2018, and we'll get as far as we can this session. But there's more work to be done, perhaps, than the 4.5 weeks will allow. Dr. Holmes, if you want to start and just focus as other people filter in, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you. Chair Leininger, Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thanks for letting me speak. My name is Mowgli Holmes. I'm the Chief Scientific Officer of Phylos Bioscience and recently have been serving as the chair of the Oregon State Cannabis Research Task Force. Mainly I want to say, as the other people have said, these are good bills. They should pass. In particular, I just want to call out a few key points that I think are really important. I think it's really important that we're inviting the tribes into this industry. We've been in touch with them and a lot recently. They're interested in the scientific aspects of this. They're interested in research. And I just want to make sure that the committee members know that they are extremely committed to working out the jurisdictional issues and keeping their health and safety standards at least as rigorous as the rest of Oregon. So I think there's no question there's a way to make that work and that it'll be for the benefit of all the tribes and for Oregon in general. And I just want to say something about the sort of ongoing issue about the perceived conflict between small growers and medical marijuana patients and the cannabis industry as a whole. So to my mind, this bill fixes a lot of those issues in important ways. And I think that the expanded access piece really will be expanded access. And I think that because the OHA has done such a good job of tackling the pesticides issue and other health and safety issues, we can feel safe to go ahead with the accelerated entrance of edibles into the market. But the real thing I want to say about that is that small growers have to be brought into this market. If we don't bring them into this market, we will be at risk of violating the Cole memo and we'll be at risk of hurting the basic economy in Oregon in really, really big ways. And we'll be at risk of ending up with an industry that doesn't look the way we want it to look. We also have to protect the rights of patients in every way that we can. But the regulatory issues that people have been focused on are not really the most important issues around protecting small growers and around protecting patients. In a way, I would say that those groups have been focusing on those issues, which I don't see as being very malleable because of the regulatory requirements that we have to put in place, and maybe not focusing on other issues that are going to be more important that maybe we'll face next session. So, for instance, this bill does a couple really good things for both those groups. It makes the clinical guidelines work group, which is going to do more than anything else to help patients. But it doesn't address how patients who don't have a lot of money are going to get their medicine. And the bill also puts in place this micro-canopy concept, which is going to be a huge deal. But it doesn't address how transport will make sure that little guys get to market. So I think in the next session, we're going to start dealing with those issues as well, making sure that all of our little growers are served by transport and that our patients have a way to get their medicine covered through some other mechanism. But right now, these bills are good.
Thanks very much. Ms. McLean, would you like to go next?
Sure.
Chairs Leininger and Burdick, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Emily McLean, and I'm here on behalf of the Drug Policy Alliance. The Drug Policy Alliance is the nation's leading organization working to promote alternatives to punitive drug laws, and DPA envisions a just society in which the use and regulation of drugs are grounded in science, compassion, health, and human rights, in which people are no longer punished for what they put in their own bodies, but only for the crimes committed against others. I am going to keep things brief. We did submit this in writing, and I'll like to follow up with all of you. We know that you probably haven't heard from the Drug Alliance, and we're a little bit late to the conversation, so I just want to add a couple of pieces of feedback and focus in on the criminal justice aspect, and then hopefully have some conversations as all of us are going through the suggested amendments that were just announced. So first of all, we want to say that we're glad about the proposed amendment that Representative Leininger discussed in regards to the post-prison and parole section. This is our top priority for DPA. Criminal justice is at the center of our mission, and we're pleased to see the direction that this conversation is going. Now that marijuana is legal and regulated as a substance and not an illegal drug, we believe that the law should treat marijuana in the same ways that it treats legally regulated drugs such as alcohol. And we believe that this section could go further, and we do hope that the conversation continues on, because we think there's a possibility that this could and should be extended to adults over 21, not just on the medical marijuana patients' cards. But we're glad about that amendment moving forward. We've also submitted in writing some additional feedback on the unlicensed extracts and also the open container law that I'd like to follow up with you on. But so far, we're supportive of Senate Bill 1511 and also about the direction of House Bill 4014.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chairs and the entire Joint Committee. I really appreciate this opportunity to comment on House Bill 4014 and Senate Bill 1511. I very much appreciate your hard work in crafting these bills. I think they're mostly great. Because of time, I will necessarily discuss the areas that we have issues with. By way of introduction, I'm married. I have four children. My family and I own and operate Siskiyou Sungrown, a small cannabis business specializing in medical extracts. I'm also the president of Oregon Sungrown Growers Guild, a grassroots organization of 140 outdoor growers. I also serve on the OLCC Rules Advisory Committee. Regarding HB 4014, I support it mostly as written. One strong request that I have is to fix patient residency. We believe this is common sense, fairness, and compassion.
Sorry for interrupting. Did you say your name at the beginning? I think maybe
he did.
Okay.
Great. Cedar Gray.
Thank you so much.
We very much support the Small Business Development Initiative, the micro canopy concept. Thank you very much, Rob Patridge, for pioneering that. We support the Youth Prevention Initiative. One comment I have about that is a request that youth prevention focus on real education based on current scientific consensus, not on historical biases, which have proven inaccurate. A personal story, our 16-year-old son is diagnosed with autism, epilepsy, and dyspraxia. The CBD extract that we produce and feed him daily works wonders. It's far more effective than any pharmaceutical that us or his doctors have found. We believe that he and his peers deserve real education around that, not scare tactics. So that's my comments about youth education. He knows he's autistic, but he knows that the CBD works wonders for him. And when he is feeling out of control, he asks for his CBD apple, which is a drop of CBD oil on a slice of apple. So we don't want him to ever be taught in school that cannabis is bad, because it saves his life. Okay, regarding Senate Bill 1511, we're asking for a change in the expanded access model. We ask for OHA stores to be supplied exclusively by medical growers only. Oh, 30 seconds, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to skip right to the end. The last issue I had to discuss with you is limitations on THC potency in medical products. My company produces a concentrate known as RSO. It's the medicine of choice for many patients with severe illnesses. Patients often consume a gram daily. Some ingest 3 grams or more daily. I suffer from PTSD. When my symptoms are unchecked, I am debilitated by muscle spasms, severe pain, anxiety, and sleep disorder. Daily use of our extract along with other therapeutic practices allows me to be effective with my family and career. I take 21,000 milligrams of THC per week. Many patients take more. This illustrates the severe issues in limiting the potency of medical products. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I ran over time. I believe that would balance public safety with compassion. Thank you again.
Thanks very much. All right, so next up we have, please, Wendy Reardon, Jonathan Manton, and Shirley Mitchell. And then on deck, please, Bob Blake, Pete Gendron, and Lindsay Reinhardt. Coming up from the other room. And
greetings, Madam Chairwoman and the rest of the M91 committee. My name is Shirley Mitchell. I live in Cave Junction. I'm a medical marijuana patient. Even in Cave Junction, it's hard to find a grower that'll stick with you. I've been able to grow for myself at a friend's house. Grandfathering doesn't apply to me because I had to move my site last year. I'm a migraineur. I had my first headache when I was 9. I've been taking some form of hydrocodone since the 1980s, developing a tolerance to it. Sometimes I wake up vomiting and I vomit all day, and I am unable to take those narcotics that I'm developing a tolerance to. Because of the cannabis, I can make a prescription of 90 pills last a year to a year and a half, and every time I go to refill it, it's up another 30%. Cannabis alleviates my pain and nausea, and it's free for the cost of a little plant food. And a pharmaceutical company can't raise that price, but the Oregon Health Authority can. It would cost me $45 to $50 a day to treat my headaches, and that is not accessible. I'm low income, and without it and the vomiting that lasts all day, I look forward to writhing in bed, moaning, whimpering, sweating, and praying for death. I'm not exaggerating. Please reconsider your 12 plant residency, having to live on the property. We're not a big deal. So that's basically what I wanted to say to you. It would really impact me in a huge way.
Thank you. Ms. Reardon?
Hi. Representatives and senators and co-chair Leninger and co-chair Burdick, thank you for having us. We've spent a really long...
Please state your name at the beginning.
Wendy Reardon. We've had a long 2 years, almost 2 years now, and I really appreciate everything that you have done for us. I appreciate your coming down and teaching yourself what a farm really is. I appreciate that. I'm going to just speak to one part of this. So many people are speaking to a lot of the others. We appreciate, there's a lot I like, and there's a lot that I think needs some help. And the part I want to talk to is about, at present, we have a nice residency requirement for businesses. I don't think patients need residency requirements, but I just want to implore you to let Oregonians have a chance at the businesses. Let us have a chance. I think we can do it. We all want to come in. We're all working hard at it. And if you, you know, the small outdoor person, it just, if you move it indoors, it's going to become so difficult for our environment. It's going to be the electricity and the environmental footprint's going to grow hugely. I ask that you so keep the residency requirement for businesses. I am a minority woman business person, and I want a chance. I'm an Oregonian. I don't want big businesses coming from out of state. I want us to have a chance. The other thing is, if you could help with the OHA rules, if you could help them know that they need an extension, and they might, and I offered our help. I'd love to help them develop rules that are really easy for people to, the small family farmer. We want to do it. We really are here for that. And so if you can help the OHA extend themselves a little bit and extend their time periods. Thank you.
Thank you so much, members of the committee, co-chairs Burdick and Leininger. My name is Jonathan Manton. I'm here with the Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild. And I want to echo Wendy's thoughts and just appreciation for the effort that you've taken. And I want to keep my, I've got written testimony for you that outlines a number of our concerns and requests. But I just want to try to tell the story in this brief time now of the family farmer that we represent, the outdoor medical grower, growing, say, 48 plants, which is kind of the limits that y'all got to last session. This is a farmer that has been growing for patients for years in the system and delivers their directly to the patient, to the grower-patient relationship, and then the excess goes to the OHA dispensaries, where it's a cost recovery model. And we appreciate the OHA's changes to what we're talking about on this kind of medical-only pathway. This is the exclusively medical side conversation. The problem that we see with that now, though, even if we get the OHA rules fixed, is that there are so few dispensaries going to be available. You just heard Andre say that 98% roughly of the surveyed dispensaries are going to the co-located model. So if these medical-only growers on 48 plant farms with their excess can't access that an OHA store because there are not many of them around, where is that excess going to go? They need another pathway. We have to fix the medical-only pathway, certainly. We also have to have this OLCC co-located store pathway available to these medical growers. There's a lot of excess that they want to come into the system. We had hundreds of people come to the meeting in Medford to demonstrate their objection to what OHA was proposing, but also to show that they want to come into the system, they want to work with us, they want to be a part of this. But if we shut off the pathways to them, that undercuts the whole system for the state. So what I'm hoping, and we so appreciate Representative Wilson's comments and Senator Brzozinski's comments and many of you stepping up for the rural farmer, but we need another fix here. Like, we've got to have this OLCC micro-canopy concept actually work for us. And there's some barriers in those conversations that we're having that we're hoping we can work with you to remove, to make that pathway work. I want to say thank you so much to Rob Patridge from OLCC. He has come down and met with us. He's shared with us his willingness to educate us on the seed to sale, to show us how this might work for that micro-canopy concept. Our leadership team is willing to accept that seed to sale tracking, but we got to remove some of the barriers that are in place to make that work for us. We're having issues with the local governments in Jackson County and Josephine County in particular with some of their local ordinances that would make this outdoor farmer who's been doing everything by the rules. And if we crack down on those folks, then we're pushing people out of a program that's been working for a long, long time. We're trying to do this the right way. We're willing to accept, you know, additional rules and regulations, but they have to make sense for our small outdoor family farmers. And so I just will end with that. I see Adam's got the card up. And would love to work with you further on some of this, and so just want to say thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So next we have a panel of Bob Blake, Pete Gendron, and Lindsay Reinhardt, and then we have on deck Clay Peeps, Rob Pendell, and Jason Osborne.
You want to go, Lindsay, or you want me to go?
Go ahead.
All right. My name's Bob Blake, and as background, I live in Deschutes County, Bend, Oregon. I'm 57 years old. I entered the cannabis industry in 2013 after learning of the medicinal and therapeutic properties of cannabis. I used to be screaming at my kids during high school and college, and now I have a different paradigm. I'm here today to support and protect the interests of medical cannabis patients, growers, and processors, especially the small ones. I'm most interested in the smaller artisanal medical cannabis growers because I believe they produce the finest medicine in the world in Oregon. I want to discuss the opt-out by counties and other jurisdictions and how this opt-out affects medical cannabis patients and growers. I want to discuss the OHA RAC process and how it is affecting medical cannabis patients and growers, as I am one of 15 members on the OHA RAC committee. And like healthcare, the issues with cannabis are cost, quality, and access. Same issues. I am not sure I understand all of what's in House Bill 4014 or 1511, Senate Bill 1511, much less any of the amendments that are just being still produced. So some of my discussion today may be off point, and it may be getting fixed. But here's the situation. I'm in an opt-out county. I don't have EFU land. It's multiple-use agriculture. I never wanted to be a huge farm, but I'm unable to get a Lux. I own a dispensary in the city of Bend. The city of Bend is not an opt-out. If I go in, I will be one of the 98% to do expanded access, and I can't sell my own product that I'm making medicinally to my own dispensary. It's a problem. In Deschutes County, there are a lot of prohibitionists that have organized, and I'll basically categorize them in many ways. You've had some testimony and submissions today. They're large prohibitionists, and they're wealthy individuals who have McMansions on EFU property, many of them. That's the answer. We have prohibitionists with money doing exactly what Oregonians don't want to do, putting McMansions on EFU property. However, we have cannabis people who are acting inappropriately, and we have to correct that. So hopefully the county will figure it out. Thank you, Senator Burdick, for the grandfathering extension. There's a problem, technical detail I'll write you. When I go to the OHA, I had well over 140 plants counts as of 12/31/2014. The problem is most of my patients and growers have migrated. I'd like to have a reset provision. I had 96. I'm willing to go by it. I just want to reset my patients and growers. Thank you. There are other comments. I'll send it to you in writing. Thank you.
Co-Chairs Leininger and Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Lindsay Reinhart. I've been trying to stay really active in this. I got this email while I was sitting here. So there was a technical fix on 4014. In House Bill 3400, Section 129, when a person convicted of a marijuana offense based on conduct that occurs before the effective date of the 2015 Act files a motion for a court order setting aside that conviction, the court shall consider the offense to be classified as if the conduct occurred effective of the 2015 Act. Or if the offense is no longer a crime, the court shall consider the offense to be classified as a Class C misdemeanor when determining the person is eligible for the order. In House Bill 4014-1, Sections 43 and 44 reduce most manufacture and delivery, respectively, within 1,000 feet of a school from a Class A to a Class C, and misdemeanors for most deliveries, prospectively, but not retroactively. It needs a section like 129 above to make it applicable for the prior convictions. And I can email that to you as well. As far as other things, I should also say I'm a registered lobbyist for Portland Normal and Sirius Enterprises. Processors to patients, we need to be able to transfer our extract that we make as medicine back to the grower or back to the patient. The committee did a great job last year raising the possession limits for flower, but the possession limit for the 28 grams of extract, if we get a 6-pound batch or a 5-pound batch or a 12-pound batch from a grower and we extract that, we're going to have far over the possession limit to return back to them. So there needs to be an exemption for medical producers to raise that position, that possession limit up. Also, we need to have an amendment where we can give medicine to patients, regardless if we are a medical process extraction company or a OLCC extraction company. We need to be able to give medicine directly to a patient for free or at the cost of production, because the dispensaries, again, you did a great job allowing the discounts and the giving of free medicine, but if they intake that product for a certain amount price per gram, they're not going to go give it away for free. So we'd like to have that. We'd also like to have a safety standard of 50 parts per million or under for residual solvents. That's just common sense. Colorado has it set like that, and most extraction companies are very far under 50 parts per million. Serious extracts, we always have none detected. It's extremely rare if we didn't. And other extraction companies are running residual solvent testing to better their product so that it has less and less. We do need these extracts in early sales. Right now, the way the cartridges are, that's going to basically give 5 extract companies a great head start over all of the other companies, and it will leave Oregonians going into Washington and paying their sales tax and not ours. So we would like to see that stimulate the Oregon economy. The lounges for the Clean Air Act, please support anything that we can do so that we can gather peacefully and consume cannabis as needed. Please remove the lux need out for the micro canopy so that people like Bob can participate in their own programs. And for out-of-state patients, please put a check box by rule for OHA that says that a patient understands that their medicine needs to stay in the state of Oregon. It would remove the culpability from the state, and it would allow the out-of-state patients to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Peter Gendron. You know me as Pioneer Pete, the Omnibudsman. At this point last year, I still lived in Sunny Valley full-time. Now I'm also co-located at 1745 Capitol Street here in Salem. I'm here today to talk about all of the issues that you're already hearing about, so I'm not going to belabor any points, but I want to go over a number of things in very rapid succession. The proposals from the OHA last week to modify Section 333 had 2 poison pills in them. One of them was the water rights requirement that would prevent all farmers like myself from providing any material into the dispensaries beginning March 1st, because we would not be compliant with their new requirements for demonstrating the reporting system compliance, which that reporting system doesn't exist, and the water use compliance, which is impossible for somebody on a residential well to comply with. By eliminating everybody who is not compliant with the water rights rule on March 1st, there would be no cannabis left in Oregon's dispensaries on April 1st. All sales would go directly back underground. Since part of the stated goal of these endeavors is to bring people into compliance in the regulated market, I would strongly recommend looking at that both with the rules that we're going to be crafting here under 4014, 1511, and the other bills that are coming up, but also reminding the OHA of the part in the Act and in 3400 that says that they're not to be tampering with the program in that fashion. I can demonstrate that my land use is an absolutely exceptional use. I have a 10-acre parcel that's out in the woods. I have currently 96 cards. However, I'm either going to be cut down to 48 or to just 1 card next year, because I'm not going to be able to continue to afford the medication I provide to my patients without being able to see some of these rules changed. I think the 96 request is a very reasonable ask. 96 plants at 10 by 10 is under 10,000 square feet. That would fit the definition of microcap, as it's under half of the size of the OLCC Tier 1 grows. I have 2 Vietnam vets that are patients. If I get my grow cut in half, which one of them do I drop? I have an 11-year-old girl who takes nothing but oil, and a year ago was in one of the most expensive beds in the state, is now at home in school playing team sports and reduced her medication use by 60%. That medication use was all paid for by the OHA, Oregon Health Plan. What do I tell her mother? What about my two patients in the apartment building three blocks up the street here that I only took on as patients because I spend so much time in the Capitol these days? They're in a place where they can't ever grow. They won't ever grow. Out of the many, many small growers, 96 plants and under, the vast majority of them are only growing for two, maybe four cards. But there are a handful of people like me that are providing this critical service, and that needs to be considered as a budgetary constraint as well. We like what we're doing. We're really good at it. Please let us continue to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your work. It's really outstanding.
So we have Clay Keefs, Rob Pendel, and Jason Osborne up. And then next on deck, we have Adam Vargas, John Sejo, and Paul, maybe Cochi.
First? Okay. Hi. I'm Jason Osborne. I'm here from Southern Oregon. I'm one of the members of Right to Grow Southern Oregon. I apologize. I wasn't planning on speaking today, but our bus was late, and I was afraid. I wanted one of our members to speak, so I'm up here just to put a face to it like everybody else is. I'm a patient. I'm a grower. I grow for myself, my wife, and two other patients in South Medford. Been doing it there now for 2 years. The first year I don't really count because it's a learning curve. And we're proud of what we do, and we're happy there. And we are just dealing with the most onerous, ridiculous reefer madness fear down there. And I guess the reason I drove up here today as part of the group is just to say to Mr. Wilson, Ms. Brzezinski, I heard you both saying that you're going to, for the medical people, please, we need your help. The things that are going on across the state in regards to what I voted for, what my wife voted for, what I know all my friends voted for. This isn't what we voted for. And it's just ridiculous that I have to be afraid that my wife, who suffers from a condition, 5 years ago, she spent a weekend in intensive care. She's 30 years old and she's got a permanent condition that causes blood clots in her body. And if she has any more, she'll have to go on Coumadin for the rest of her life. And the cannabis that we grow is preventing that. And if we lose that, it's a simple choice. She either goes on Coumadin, which as we all know is rat poison, or she starts getting limbs cut off. And I really enjoy the hugs I get from my wife. So I don't want her to have to lose her arms. So please make sure that it's important to me that everybody else in this state knows that medical's been here for 15 years. It's good. Why mess with it? So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for your time.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I want to thank you all for all the hard work. I also want to thank all the people involved with the OHA and the OLCC for all their hard work in putting together these regulations and these laws. I think we're making some very, very positive steps. My name is Rob Pendel. I'm with the Oregon Sun Grown Growers Guild. So first of all, I think that we're, with these new amendments, I think we're really quickly moving towards a regulatory rules that we can be very proud of and that will be looked to as a as an example as more states across the country become more towards the legalization of cannabis. I think we're doing a very good job of that, and thank you all for that. I think there are just a few little minor tweaks that we could polish to make it a little better. The first thing is residence requirements. I think that we should leave residency requirements in place for the business portion of the cannabis in order basically to allow the Oregon businesses to get themselves established and at least for a few couple of years keep those residency requirements in place to allow the Oregon business people to get themselves established before the large influx of out-of-state money comes in to get involved in this industry, which I'm sure will happen eventually. I think that we should remove the residency requirements for patients to, again, to allow as much access to the patients as possible. Again, it really is about making sure that the patients can get what they need. And so let's just let the patients that need it, let's let them get it. And then the last thing is just to eliminate the ability for the recreational grower processor, producer, whatever, just to sell into the medical market. Just make sure that any product going into the medical market specifically is produced by medical producers only. Again, thank you very much for your work, and that's all I have today.
Madam Co-Chair and other co-chairs, I thank you for the moment to speak today. My notes aren't with me, and this makes me nervous to even speak in public, so
you
bear with me.
You could start with your name, though.
My name is Clay Pierce. I'm a medical marijuana patient, and I'm hearing a lot of talk about harm reduction and protecting patients and just protection. I don't know what you're trying to protect. Cannabis has never hurt anybody, any man, woman, or child in the entire history of mankind. I don't see anything wrong with it. It protects us. It helps us. Only thing I see being protected and helped here is money. And you can't limit us. I mean, everybody is different. We all need different amounts. We all have to decide on our own what we need for our own health. I don't understand how you guys can sit up here and talk limits on things that should only be between us patients and our doctors, not panels and stuff. Cannabis has never hurt anybody, and it's not going to hurt anybody. It has no LD50. There is no toxic dose. I'm quite sure if somebody were able to kill themselves, they would have by now. I'm sure it's had been tried many times. I mean, if you raise your children right, they're not going to get into your medicine. I don't understand any of this. As a patient, this is very confusing to try to keep up with this and try to stay legal with something that has no harm. And again, this is all about money. It's all I can see. Thank you very much.
All right. So the next panel is Paul Cucci, Adam Vargas, and John Sajo. And then on deck, we have a name that I'm going to pronounce as Damical Witham, Chris McAllister, and maybe Braxton Creel.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Sajo. I'm the director of the Umpqua Cannabis Association, proud father of a drug-free honor student. And I want to thank Senator Brzezinski for taking my 14-year-old son on as an intern to learn about government here in the Capitol today, so it's very exciting. To follow up on what some other people have said, and there's been a lot of discussion in this committee about creating an industry based on small business and family farms and moving the existing growers into the legal market. And I just want to say from my perspective, it's not happening. There's 47,000 growers licensed under the medical program, and about 250 applied for the OLCC. That's less than 0.5%. In Douglas County, there's 1,700 growers. Zero have applied for OLCC licenses, and that even though it's opted out in the county, most of the cities in Douglas County did not opt out. I served on the Rules Advisory Committee to the OLCC Grower Subcommittee. None of the outdoor growers that served on that Rules Advisory Committee are able to get an OLCC license. There's too much regulation. It's too expensive. What you're doing, you know, another thing I'd say, step back and look. We have early sales now. Brilliant idea. You heard testimony last session that the current growers produce maybe five times what the whole state needs. The current medical growers are easily supplying the entire rec market. We don't need out-of-state businesses and investors. You just need to let the current small medical marijuana farmers do what they do. We can increase our businesses by pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps if you remove some of these bureaucratic obstacles and hurdles that are keeping people out. Otherwise, I think you will run afoul of the Cole memo, because what you're doing is pushing out the existing small farmers, and they're mostly going to go back into the black market, and creating a new system of millionaire farms. I estimate for myself, because I've looked around, do I go to a different county? You know, what about the water rights? It looks like for me to get an OLCC license and do the tier two farm I'd like to do would cost me something on the order of $1 million. I don't have it. Neither do the other farmers. So I think we have a serious issue with the scale of what's happening here, and we're missing the people that are doing it now, and it's proved by the last 4 months of successful early sales without problem, without supply issues. A lot of other things. I think one way to address that, the big entities have all the edge here. I encourage you to look again at some kind of tax on big business that maybe doesn't start till gross revenues exceed $1 million, but make the big entities pay more, or this industry is going to end up with Walmart controlling it, and we're all going to wish it hadn't. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
I'll go next.
Great.
Thank you so much for talking with us and listening to. My name is Paul Kochi. I'm from the Josephine County in a little town of Selma. I want to talk a little bit about the grandfather rights and stuff like that. I would really like you guys to consider new patients in 2015. Currently, I would only have two or three people that would fall under those grandfather rights. And I still have the new patients that I took on last year, even though I didn't really, you know, have the time or the stuff to take them on, they still really needed the care. There's a dispensary around them, maybe 20 miles or so one way. If they were to go down there without me growing for them, it would cost anywhere from $200 to $800 a month for them, and they can't do that since they're on, you know, low income and stuff like that. I do think the reset provision may be a good option for people that have the knowledge and the ability to grow. Selma only has 3,500 people in it. We have no schools, pretty much farmland, vineyards, stuff like that. So there's really nobody that's going to be getting harmed, or there's just not going to be anybody stumbling upon it. You know, all the neighbors are really nice. They all really like the medical marijuana program. If I can't grow for them, I don't know what to do later on. I will still provide them with care somehow. I don't know how yet, but I'm still looking into those options. And to push the deadline farther than March 1st is another issue, too. There's a whole lot of different stuff, different rules, different rights, and I think almost everybody wants to comply with it because it makes us as a state better and makes our economy and our community a lot stronger too. So if we really look at those different things, I think we can really satisfy the majority of people and still continue giving the patients the care that they need. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name's Adam Vargas. Thank you for hearing us. Thank you for allowing us time to talk. I'm a processor, but I'm a patient first and mostly. I have an unknown autoimmune disorder, which has aged my skeleton to at 2.7 times the normal rate, and I'm 35, so I myself need 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams of a day of medicine, sometimes 6 to 8, sometimes more, depending, you know, on how bad my pain is. I have no cartilage in my joints, haven't for a long time, so all my bones are chipped and spurred and rubbed together. It also causes a lot of muscle and ligament problems for me. But I know people worse than me, you know. I know people with MS, and they're much worse than me. All these new requirements, you know, like everyone here and everyone that's in this industry, everyone wants this, you know. We all want to be part of this, but with how much it costs, you know, for my company to meet all the requirements, we would need $200,000. I know a lot of people that are getting out-of-state money, you know, a lot of out-of-state investors are coming in, and that's not really what we want, you know. We're trying to grow Oregon here, right? The program has been in existence for 17 years, mostly without incident to children. And all these people that really want to work with you guys and really want to be part of this, a lot of them are going to be forced to go to the black market, you know, because they can't afford to do this. A lot of people will do that to continue to support the patients that they believe they're helping get life-saving medicine and medicine that improves the quality of their lives. And people don't care about laws. They care about people, other people, you know? Especially when you see some of these patients. You don't care about the law anymore. All you care about is helping this other person that's really sick, that's dying, that, you know, can't eat anything or is vomiting all the time or can't get out of bed. You know, you see that and, you know, that's all you're thinking about. And so I'm telling you, lots of people will go to the black market. Everybody came out of it, and people will go back. And with all these new requirements, you know, like as far as like decreasing dosages, all you're doing is increasing packaging. So you're increasing post-consumer waste. You're increasing costs to the companies to make these smaller doses, and people are going to have to buy many more to reach what they need. Also, not allowing processors to use what they... Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, questions
yes, sir.
For the panel?
Pardon?
Questions for the panel?
Oh, yes. Actually, I'm sorry, we have a question for the panel from Senator Farioli. So if folks who were just...
Actually, it's for Mr. Sajo.
Okay, it's for Mr. Sajo. Thank you, everybody else.
First of all, thanks for your testimony. I really appreciate... what I hear is clarity and honesty in your testimony, also because you appreciate the early start, which I thought was brilliant as well. If Oregon medical producers are producing five times as much cannabis as being consumed by the recreational market, I have a problem getting my mind around the idea that we have heard testified to in previous hearings, there's really no leakage from the medical system. Those don't comport. The other issue is it seems like most of the medical producers do not want to engage in the seed-to-sale tracking system. They're resisting. So, you know, if I've got five times the volume being produced by folks who want to participate in this industry in Oregon, there is, and some folks are saying there's no leakage. Of course, that's impossible with the volumes that are being produced. The whole point of getting folks access to the surplus sales into the recreational market was to help them pay for the seed-to-sale tracking and the security systems. So I think what I'm going to ask for, Madam Chair, is rather than a question, somebody's going to have to convene a group of people who will start dealing with these issues in a more forthright manner. There's a lot of production going on. There's a lot of black market supply going on in the medical side. And if folks want to make that comport with the Cole Memorandum, which is a requirement for us to have any kind of a program, they're going to have to do some tracking. They're going to have to submit to some inspections and some requirements. I guess my question after all that is there a group out there that should be asked to convene a discussion, wide-ranging, not necessarily involving legislators, that can deal with those issues? The volume being produced, the leakage being documented occasionally, and the tracking that it would be necessary, access to the recreational market, and the regulations that are would be deemed to be reasonable by the medical growers. If we can't answer all those questions, then, you know, we probably won't be doing very much in this short legislative session except chasing information that doesn't seem to exist. That's my question, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Farioli, members of the committee, I guess what I'd say is this. I think we all were pretty scared about the idea of tracking at the beginning, and I remain a skeptic that it will. I think people can beat most systems, and I provided testimony last session about multiple ways people can beat almost any system, including bribing OLCC people and hacking the computer systems and so forth. I think people really just need time to adjust, and you know, since that time, a lot of the other aspects of the bureaucratic, of the regulatory burden have proved to be much more significant. You know, for myself, I live in a county that has opted out. I think you need to consider grandfathering in the people that are currently supplying the system. If you shut them out and then add, you know, these expensive new farms, you're just exacerbating the black market issue because you're increasing the supply. So I think people just need, you know, a transition period with the tracking. And, you know, if you want to eliminate the black market, you have to allow the OLCC to buy all the marijuana they can get their hands on. I mean, frankly, I think you ought to consider having them buy it from the four plant people that have excess, because otherwise somebody has four plants and, you know, has a few extra pounds. It's illegal for them to sell it. It's illegal for them to possess it. You know, they kind of, you know, it seems to me there's a lot of things that could be looked at.
Madam Chairman, I asked the OLCC for a list of barriers to the acquisition from all sources. You know, what's the problem with co-location? What's the problem with acquiring supply from whatever source? I never got a response from them. I got an apology, but I never got a response. It sounds to me like you've made a suggestion that would be tremendously valuable, not only in terms of maybe giving people more time to adapt, but maybe just compelling the OLCC to access supply wherever they can find it, whether it's a medical grower or a recreational grower. It just seems to me that there's never been a more complicated public policy issue to come before me in 20 years. So you have to understand, we don't know the answers to the problems you're facing. We're exploring the solutions. You're providing inputs so we can get the solutions. I really appreciate the suggestions that I heard here from you today. One of them I think we really need to look at.
Thank you. Senator Prezonsky.
So, in following up with Senator Farioli, one of the things that's been surprising to me is that all of the testimony we've had, John, in the past regarding how much marijuana supposedly is growing here, how much we actually need for the market, I understand there's a lot of people who are now looking at removing all the residency requirements. And the one that I think that we really should be focusing on maintaining is the one on the growers and allowing the growers now that already have enough abundancy here. If we maintain the residency requirement for up till 2020, it will give that transition. It will, in fact, allow for those. And why are we asking people to come in and grow more in this state if we already have it? And if we really need to take care of outside interest coming in, we could set up a special license, a vertical type of license that allows them to grow for their own operation, but they can't flood the market. That's the issues that I keep on hearing from the small growers, is that they're just going to be flooded, saturated out because of what's going to happen with the outside money influence.
Okay. I think we have time. This room is going to be used at 3 for the Judiciary Committee. So we have time, I think, for one more panel. Again, as our committee administrator, Mr. Crawford, noted, if you're one of the people who has not had a chance to testify today, we invite you to submit written testimony. But we have, for this panel, I think it's Damian Witham, maybe something like that, Chris McAllister and Braxton Creel. Yes, sir.
Well, this panel's getting, are there folks here who traveled more than 100 miles and didn't get a chance to testify? I just wanted to make
great.
Note of
maybe
that.
Maybe we can very quickly have you come up and speak a couple words. Thank you for noting that.
You bet.
All right. Please feel free to join us at the table this time. And if you could each, maybe 2 minutes each, that'd be great. We'd like to get those 100 milers in if we can. Please go ahead, sir, and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris McAllister, co-chairs, vice co-chairs, and esteemed members of the committee. I am a resident of Springfield in Lane County. I am here today to share a couple of ideas as well as offer an attempt to navigate what is most likely a thankless job for many of the people involved in here. I do not represent anyone who does not feel I do, among the patients, growers, caregivers, and residents of this state. Of the people who help craft these ideas, we are the sons and daughters of Oregon Lumber, of Oregon Waters, and of Oregon Fields. There are contributors who are fourth-generation Oregonian-born carpenters to decades transplanted civil servants from the East Coast. Doctors, nurses, teachers, and builders have all been part of this process. The majority of the contributors are below the poverty level or make just enough to not qualify for aid with state-determined fees. Of our ideas, we maintain several items. OMMA was passed in 1998, whereas the opt-out was regarding M91 voting items. As much of 3,400 is done with emergency clauses for public health, we request that state law apply across the state when dealing with health access. Please remove dispensaries from the opt-out, and please alter this bill by allowing transportation to a dispensary to not be a violation from producers. I will be submitting in writing a proposal that would help keep make a compliance-based system to help keep Oregon home, Oregon grown program. So I suggest that we look at the Farmer Direct bill of 2012 and consider having, since every citizen can have up to four plants, consider having offering an outlet, whether through farmer markets or through limited sales, to be able to keep Oregon flower inside the Oregon borders. I will be submitting several things in writing, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Madam Co-Chair, committee members, thank you for your time. For the record, my name is Braxton Creel. I am a resident of Clackamas County and an OMMP patient. Everyone here, for the most part, says good bills, let them pass. Well, they don't represent me. In my own humble opinion, 4014 is an all-around bad bill, as it opens the door to out-of-state business and will cause an unfair advantage against Oregon growers as we get our homegrown industry established. It also creates a one-way street that potentially pushes OMMP growers, processors, and such into OLCC. If there is going to be a bill, it should be a bill to reinforce Oregonians' rights and create a two-way street that will allow both programs to work together. Additionally, with the other bill, 1511, I would like to ask that in any grow site that was registered on 12/31/2014 be allowed to grow the maximum allowed plants for that time, to grandfather only those with active cards at that time, cripple many growers and patients who move cards and migrate for outdoor grows. I feel as though there needs to be an amendment addressing the opt-out, not to include OMMP and OHA dispensaries and grows in the language, as a lot of jurisdictions have misinterpreted the intent of legislature. And I want to thank you for all of your hard work. I know it's got to be a tough job. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chairs and the members of the committee. My name is Gina Erdman, and I would like to thank you for allowing me to testify before you today. I would also like to thank all the patients that made their way out here. For each face you see here, there are 10,000 more that couldn't make it. I'm a grower, patient, mother, and rural family sun grower, resident of Josephine County. One topic that I would like to speak on is the onerous tracking requirements. It's interesting to hear that everyone's a small family farmer today. I would like to tell you that rural considerations do not support the onerous tracking of OLCC. You are requiring a lot of electricity, technical abilities, and basic things like checking email is very hard in a rural place. You're talking about people that are off the grid, that don't have electricity, that aren't wired for that. What we do have is natural sunlight, and that's why we're there. You know, that's why we make our choices to grow medicine there, pure, clean, with the sun. I also want to speak in support of residency requirement for recreational licenses. I believe it's important to ensure small farms have access to the opportunity to move into the regulated system. There's a clear interest from producers who are already established in other states, and we fear that that will dominate this opportunity. Current medical growers have worked with patients to legitimize cannabis as not only a medicine but also an industry and should be encouraged to participate. So I support the two-year residency requirement, except the only single place where it should not be is for patients. This bill allows out-of-state investors to reap the rewards of our new industry while denying life-changing medical care for sick patients. That is exactly backward, and the removal of residency for patients is a moral imperative. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-chair.
Right. Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry.
This is going to be our last
okay.
I'm afraid, because we have a 3 o'clock panel and another.
I was going to say you had that other 100-mile, the woman that's standing up. You might want to try to squeeze her in.
I am happy to do that. I think that there are going to be some people who traveled 100 miles who did not end up having an opportunity to testify today, and I would like to encourage committee members who do not have a meeting after this to consider having conversations with folks who need to talk. I'm actually vice chair of a committee that meets in this room at 3, so I'm afraid I won't be able to do that. But, sir, and then the woman who raised her hand, you're welcome to come up, too. We can, if you can each do, like, 2 minutes, that would be a way we could help squeeze you in.
Co-chairs Burdick and Linger in committee. My name is Alan Unger. I am the chair of the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners. You've all been to Deschutes County. We have class 6 volcanic soils, 10 inches of rain, 94-day growing season. What we grow is hobby farms. It's the lifestyle people want. It was a pattern that happened before Senate Bill 100, and Senate Bill 100 made that most of that land EFU. On December 21st, the Board of Commissioners deliberated on time, place, and manner regulations for rural Deschutes County. House Bill 3400 said marijuana is a crop, permitted on EFU, and use reasonable time, place, and manner. Right to Farm says no nuisance regulations. So we opted out. We aren't certain on reasonable regulations. We told ourselves we'd revisit it in 90 days. I'm here to ask for a solution. If we can't regulate time, place, and manner on rural EFU, if we can't protect the rural lifestyle of rural living, we're going to go to a ballot measure on November of this year, and both sides are organizing, and it's going to be a real free-for-all in Deschutes County. We want to be reasonable. We need some certainty in the regulation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I appreciate your patience in waiting till the end. Thank you. It was not my intention to wait till the end. Yes, Anne.
Hi, my name is Anna Cann, C-A-N-N. I drove from Eugene today with my disabled daughter who didn't want to come in here. So she has traumatic brain injury. When she was 6 months old, she was violently shaken by my babysitter, and she received brain damage. This was in Idaho. Long story short, I'm going to say that she's on medical marijuana now. She's been on medical marijuana for 3 years. She's 17 years old. With her traumatic brain injury, she had severe seizures, 200 a day sometimes. And as she got older, they just got more severe a couple times a day. As I embraced my lifestyle as a cannabis consumer, I was reached out by the activists who are a part of this whole community who taught me so much about CBD and THC and how it could stop her seizures and cure cancer. And so my position as a mother and a mommy and a medical grower for my child, for myself and other patients, who also is on a recreational application, who also sees every side of every group, I want to represent the patients. This isn't about money. I can hardly pay my rent right now, and I am a grower. I donate. I help people with cancer. I have a 92-year-old patient who rides his bike using my topicals to get to my house, and he hands me, he's a 92-year-old Purple Heart World War II vet who brings me his little bottle and expects a refill, and I will fill it up for him. And so I just know that what I see in the community is that people aren't going to obey the laws if they're not the laws that if they can't compromise, that we have to have a compromise. I guess that's really what I'm saying is open your minds, wake up to what's really happening. My daughter has already taken 500 milligrams of cannabinoids today to be seizure-free. She's going to take another 300. It's all in the chemical makeup of the full plant extract, and us small people need to be able to grow and process these medicines to help actual people who need it. Okay. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1511 and House Bill 4014 and adjourn the meeting. 1511 and House Bill 4014 and adjourn the meeting.